right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. This is Periodically Speaking, How to Bring Lit Mags into the Classroom. I'm Ted Dodson with the Community of Literary Magazines and Presses, and I'll be proctoring this whole thing. Starting all the way here on the right, we have Martha Cooley. Next to her, we have Jen Acker. Then we have Julian Zalbayeskoa, which I said correctly to him about 5 seconds ago. And then we have Minna Proctor next to me. And let's just start with a couple of just introductions, if you want to just start at the end really quick.
Hi. I teach at Adelphi University and have taught also in several low residency MFA programs. I teach at Adelphi both MFA students and undergrads, so both populations. I teach creative writing and literature, and I'll tell you more about using Lit Mags in the classroom when we get to them. Jen?
I'm the editor of The Common. It's a literary magazine that publishes work with a strong sense of place, so that's our editorial focus. With some NEA funding, we've recently, it's not a new initiative, but have launched into a more robust development of teaching The Common in the Classroom. It's called The Common in the Classroom. And so thinking about ways to provide teachers a kind of resources or connect them with other faculty who have done this. And trying to think about how to draw from our robust community. I also teach at Amherst College a class called Editors and Authors. So if it seems appropriate to talk about that, I do use The Common in that classroom. So maybe I'll tell you a bit about that. It's an undergraduate seminar.
Okay, I'm Julian Zabal-Bayeskoa. I teach in the Honors College over at University of Massachusetts Lowell, primarily a first-year honors seminar class called Text in the City that, much like The Common, focuses a great deal on place, the place being Lowell, Massachusetts, home of Jack Kerouac, also setting for the film The Fighter. And I also teach fiction workshops at Grub Street in Boston.
I got one, I think.
Oh, sorry.
Do I have one?
You do.
Yeah,
I'm going to use this one.
It's all yours.
It's all mine.
Well, I'm mine too.
I'm Minna Proctor. I edit The Literary Review, which is this magazine. And I teach at Fairleigh Dickinson University. I teach creative nonfiction to undergraduates. And in the MFA program, I teach creative nonfiction to graduate students, and I teach the publishing side of it. And TLR is very involved, very much part of our MFA program. So I guess that's what I'll talk about.
Great. All right, thank you. So basically we're going to have just kind of a little bit of a proctor discussion for a little bit, and then I'm going to open it up to some general questions from the audience. I hope you have some real burners for us. So my first question, this is a pretty rogue question, and maybe we can just start this way, go down, start a minute. Just very generally, why should Lit Mags be taught in the classroom?
Okay, so I think they sent us some of these questions ahead of time, and this is actually the one that seemed the most interesting in a way. I think that Lit Magazine should be taught in the classroom because it's the material that gets published in literary magazines is of a different, it's less mediated in a lot of ways than the material that gets into anthologies or goes through big publishers. It's often new work, emerging work. It's kind of a level of writing that's much newer and closer to what especially an MFA student might be doing. So it's looking at your peers' work that's operating at a high caliber, and that's why I think literary magazines should be taught in the classroom. It also tends to be hard to find sometimes the work that is published in some literary magazines in terms of experimental work or translation. We publish things that other people won't. So that's my basic answer.
Yeah, going off of that, I mean, for a fiction workshop, you know, like Grub, I mean, a lot of the work found in literary journals are written by writers who are maybe just a few years along, you know, on the whole learning curve of what these writing programs, you know, offer us. So it does offer the students, you know, a caliber of writing that is that could be new to them. I think too of that Gary Steingart quote that we've reached a really interesting time in America where the number of readers is equal to the number of writers, and so maybe by bringing in literary journals, we can help boost the number of the readers there, so that they at least outnumber the writers. And then for the course over at UMass Lowell, the honors course I teach, you know, with the Common, which is a magazine that, you know, where you have characters that characters or moments that react against place, you know, for the purposes of my class specifically, I mean, this is a wonderful opportunity for the students to be, you know, more aware of you know, the way that place operates in their lives, the way in which, you know, their lives operate as a narrative, to make them more aware of that. And the wonderful thing about literature quite often is entering another's consciousness and being changed by that and being, you know, more aware of the moment that you're in. And so, you know, so works like that offer students that opportunity.
Yeah, I also think that the sense of immediacy that students feel from literary magazines is really important. It feels like sometimes these are even local authors that they might be reading, and it just feels more readily available or attainable or close to them than handing them a published book or a more classical work. So I think that sense of immediacy is wonderful, as well as the diversity of content that you can go, as Minna said, from to very different styles of work within the same issue and to different genres. I also think it's important to be developing our future readers, and that showing that literary magazines are where a lot of interesting publishing happens and are often the springboard for careers that develop will sort of teach students that if they want to read, you know, who is publishing now and who's going to be publishing for the next 25 and 40 and 60 years, that literary magazines are the place to discover those voices. And then finally, just from the Commons point of view, because we have this place-based focus, I like the idea of trying to bring literature and into and connect it with other disciplines in the humanities that might have a similar place-based focus, whether it's art or architecture or geography. I think there's a lot of interesting overlap there as well.
The poet Liam Rector used to say that we're all part of a literary circulatory system, and I like thinking about that as if we're all sort of in a body together, and there are humors, as they used to call them centuries ago, fluids, energies coursing through us, and the literary magazine, I think, is a great sort of, each literary magazine is a small container that sort of does that circulating also, and for all the reasons my colleagues here have said, that immediacy is really important. And I think too, for reader, I teach fiction to undergrads and grads, as I said, and I teach a freshman seminar about stories, and for a lot of my class, my students in my classes, these are, some of them are first generation college students, a lot of them have no idea what a literary magazine is. As a physical object, it's a surprise to them. They need to be, first of all, asked to just respond to it as an object, to look at its cover, to look at its design. And then they're always sort of startled by categories, by, they need to be taught what genre is or might be or has been or how it should be resisted. And they need to think in terms of the kinds of categories that inform an editorial vision. I brought The Common, I've brought Agni, I've brought Consequence, A Public Space. When I think about A Public Space, that journal has a category called If You See Something, Say Something. And I teach in New York City, where that slogan appears on the subway and subway stations, and students react strongly to that, to sort of, well, how is that being repurposed inside the covers of something that's called literary? How does that work? How does that make me feel? What should I be doing in response to it. So there's many different kinds of teaching opportunities that arise with literary magazines that don't arise in anthologies or other kinds of assigned work of whatever magnificence it may be. There's just things that happen with the introduction of the literary magazine as a cultural artifact that are fresh for students.
Cool. I guess kind of going off of that, I do wonder then, like, what specifically you find makes a literary magazine particularly teachable. And in that case, I mean, you just kind of talked a little bit about this already, but, you know, what really does make a literary magazine, let's say, different from, you know, an anthology or teaching a book or, let's say, even just a single short story or something along those lines?
Julianne, do you want to answer first, or do you want me to?
Okay.
Well, let me give an example. I think it helps to sort of get concrete. Again, with the freshmen, one thing I had them do, I brought the Common in and a few other literary magazines, but I had them choose stories that we read during the semester, be they from a lit mag or an anthology or just provided by me. And at the end of the term, I said, you have to write a pitch to an imaginary literary magazine. You have to decide what its vision is, and then you have to take one of these already published stories and pretend you're sort of the publicist for that. The author's very shy and doesn't want to submit her or his work. So you're going to submit it for that person to this literary magazine, and you're going to explain why this story that you read this term and loved should be in the magazine. That's a way of inserting the student into the slipstream, you know, into the literary circulatory system, having him or her think about, okay, someone else is soliciting work, but not just any work. Work that moves or agitates or excites for particular reasons. And it's a way of teaching a literary critical discourse while also teaching that we live in a marketplace too, and people have to be persuaded, while also teaching that, you know, if you can't find a way to sort of marry up your critical language with the heat of what you feel about a story, you won't be as good a writer, you won't be as good a reader. So it teaches them to be sort of reader and writer in one go. And I find it turned out to be a really exciting exercise for them. And I got some students who actually really turned it into a creative writing exercise on their own. They got whimsical and peculiar in their responses, and that was new to them and new for me.
Great, great. And I want to ask you all about specific exercises in a second, but anybody else? I mean, what do you think? Like, what really is like the difference for you between like teaching a lit mag, and what makes teaching lit mags particularly teachable?
I mean, I mean that exercise you just described is so interesting because it gets to the really elusive component of this project, which is the editorial take, the perspective, how much each of these 7,000 literary magazines that we have out in the marketplace to look on, how much each one is a reflection of really one or two people's editorial vision and taste, which is such a funky thing to think about being important. And I don't think that that's as big a component in if you're going to go buy a book from a publisher. You may not even know who the publisher is, but I think that that these magazines are mirrors of their editors to some extent, just to reveal the narcissism of the project. but that's a hard thing to sort of teach and explain, and you kind of capture a way of teaching that that's unique. I think maybe anthologies might have that quality, mm-hmm. but otherwise it's really it really does seem to be magazines that express that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know. I mean, just from a being an editor, but instructor, instead of teaching amalgams and perspectives 101 or whatever the anthology may be, the exciting thing about these literary journals, as is evident at the book fair right now, is that there's so many of them and they come out periodically. If your students are, say, subscribing to, you know, whatever journal it might be, mine are subscribing to The Common, it's a really exciting thing for the instructor to constantly be, exposed to new work and to have to find a way to teach that. You know, there's a scene from Election, that movie, you know, from the 90s that I really like, and it's, I don't know the character's names anymore, but Reese Witherspoon, is, you know, is in the class when she's looking at Matthew Broderick, and, you know, she's like, oh, poor, you know, whatever his name is, you know, always having to, you know, to give this, you know, spiel about the government, and it's him, you know, now, like, flashing back, same, like, white cutoff, you know, collared T-shirt, you know, just a different tie every single time. It's like, oh, we've got the three branches of government, and then, you know, cut, different tie. We've got the three branches of government, you know, as the years, you know, go on. As a teacher, like, I'd be bored to death if I had to do that. The great thing about this is that you are, you know, constantly being brought new material and having to find a way to, you know, to incorporate it into your, you know, into your classroom, into your, you know, into your exercises. It's, you know, it requires you to improvise. I remember a long time ago, I was in, you know, it doesn't matter where it was. I was someplace far away and it was super exotic. But anyways, when I was in a jazz club, and there were these jazz musicians who never even, you know, had met each other before the show, and they're saying, this is a great thing about jazz, is that, you know, if you know your instrument well, you can go and you could play with whoever. You know, I'm certainly no, you know, jazz musician. You know, like if J.K. Simmons' character from Whiplash came into my classroom, I'm sure he would slap me across the face, but this is what it causes you to do. You know, you're on your toes, you have to improvise. So it's a really exciting thing, too, that, you know, this opportunity that teaching a literary journal, you know, can offer you.
Yeah, I think picking up on Martha's point about being able to, being forced to marry response and sort of analysis, I think that can be, literary magazines can be an opportunity for that, and that is the way that I use pieces from the Common as well, is that's, you know, the idea of developing either an editorial vision or being able to articulate why it is that you feel a certain way about a piece is a critical part of an education and of learning to be a writer and of learning to be a better reader and just figuring out how to communicate. So making them understand that what part of an editor's job is to be able to communicate, especially to an author, what it is that's going on in a piece, I think it is just a crucial educational step that is not often taught directly in a lot of ways. So sometimes I can bring in works in progress, if it's okay with the author that I'm working with, and be able to show students what the evolution of a piece looks like. And then, so that's an opportunity that literary magazines provide that you couldn't get with an anthology as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. I guess kind of taking off of that a little bit, you know, now I'm kind of wondering now what the classroom itself looks like, a classroom that uses literary magazines. You know, do you think that a classroom that utilizes literary magazines as a primary source, you know, just as reading material, do you think it feels different? Is it a different classroom than one that uses, let's say, the same anthology over and over again?
One should hope so.
Boom.
It's better.
I mean, I would never use the same anthology. I too would begin snoring partway through. That would be deleterious to my students' appreciation of literature, but. I think the difference it has to do with comments that have been made earlier about students understanding that this is often work from emerging news, often to young voices. So for students, that sense that this is within their grasp in some way is really important. You know, but also it does get back to the issue, too, of why we define work in certain ways, why we label it and categorize it in certain ways, and what's healthy and positive about that, what sort of causes us to be ambivalent in some ways about that, who gets privileged and who doesn't, what also, and this gets a little bit away from text, but what the relationship of the visual to the written is in a lit mag, is occasion for a conversation that doesn't tend to happen if you're teaching any, even, you know, a great story collection or novels or whatever. Also, as a fiction writer and teacher,
I'm always trying to insert the spoon with the poem in it into the mouth at the same time, you know, just to get the poetry diet reinforced all the time.
Absolutely.
And to get students always to be thinking about language as music. And lit mags are fun. You assign a story and then you go, oh, why don't we just turn the page and quickly read the next poem? We've got 5 more minutes kind mm-hmm. of thing. And they're all taken aback and then they get their poem for the day and they go out nourished, you know.
Out of you two, have anything to add?
No, I mean what I've said. Well, what I do is a little bit different in sort of in this class that I teach about teaching students what editing is, or at least according to my definition, what editing is. And so it's the opportunity to look at pieces of different styles and of different genres and how to approach a piece in different ways, but still rigorously, and often from a structural point of view, which again I think is something that students don't learn in a high school education or even in a lot of college classes. I find students are very good thinking about, well, this sentence is bad and it's bad for this reason, but we think about, well, look. More globally at the arc of the piece, where does the piece fall or sag, or where is it confusing? That kind of intellectual structural work is something that that students can really dig into, and you can do that with literary magazines because of the diversity of genres, the different styles, and also because you might have opportunities to talk to the authors or talk to the editors. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd bounce off of that. I know Lou's already mentioned earlier, but the demystification of the whole process, too, for the fiction writers. And, too, you know, we were able to bring, you know, Jennifer into the classroom so she could speak to my students. You know, that is a really big thing for them to be able to see that this isn't, you know, there's no, you know, archetypal sort of gatekeeper that we don't have access to. You know, and same with bringing in, you know, writers, and I've been brought in myself to speak to the students whose work it is that they're reading. You know, this is a really important thing for people to realize, just like, you know, going to the book fair as we all are right now, that this is a possibility. This isn't out of our reach by any means.
That's really great. So I guess my next question is specifically about, I guess, exercises that you would want to use in the lit mags in the classroom for. Like, what specific sort of assignments do you give based off of lit mags? And then also, do you assign a specific magazine for all the students, or do you allow them, in a sense, like, to pick and choose and, like, to, I guess, construct their own diet, in a sense?
I have two main exercises that I use. One is when I have I have sometimes as many as four or five or six four credit interns who work in my office, the undergraduates, during a semester, and they always have to go read and review six other literary magazines and talk about how they would characterize those magazines vis-a-vis TLR. So they're judging it against the magazine they know well, but how is this one different? What are the editors doing? And they have kind of I would call it a guided list, where I give them, I sort of assign magazines, but I want them to be looking at magazines that I'm secretly spying on too, so I can do reconnaissance work. So it's a double duty. In terms of when I'm actually teaching more about publishing to the MFA students, we do a big master class in our summer session where I hand out a lot of first pages of submissions. This is just to teach the editorial perspective. I hand out a lot of first pages from our slush pile and have the students read like 20 of them in 10 minutes and vote whether or not they're going to read the second page. So we talk a lot about that kind of the immediate impact and what it feels like to read a lot of different kinds of work, the response that you're talking about, and also teaches new writers what where their work, what their work is going out into. So it gives them kind of a really hands-on experience of the unsolicited submission, which I think is helpful when it comes to them submitting their work. Mm-hmm. So those are the two specific exercises I use.
You know, for my students, because they're undergrads over at UMass Lowell, yes, we're not necessarily focusing on it in that way. What we do is one essay from issue one of the Common called Brown Road, 1853 to 1912. Maybe that's the title. There's a parenthetical title by Ted Conover, and you know, in fact, that's how I suppose we got, you know, ended up teaching, is because I went by, you know, the Commons booth, like that Saturday, you know, during the Great Purge, when it's, you know, when it's like scorched earth mentality down at the book fair. And, I mean, get your subscriptions now. You'll never get as good of a deal today as no. You're going to get fantastic deals on Saturday. But you know, so Jennifer was telling me about, you know, I explained my class, and she was saying, oh, we've got, you know, in, you know, issue one, this Ted Conover piece. I was familiar with his work. Like, maybe some of you, you know him. He's an immersion journalist. He did, you know, he worked as a prison guard in Sing Sing for a year undercover, and then wrote this great expose that I think was the finalist for the Pulitzer National Book Award. He, you know, he rode the rails with hobos way back when, back, I believe, for his senior thesis. And then he traveled across the border with immigrants three times, you know, living in a feeder village somewhere outside Querétaro or something. So he's done some really exciting stuff. So I'm like, okay, this sounds great. You know, I'll be able to teach Ted Conover's piece in my class. You know, the way she explained it, it's going to be perfect. And I suppose it just goes with the whole, you know, improvising sort of thing. It is a really, really, really dry essay. You know, no offense to any Ted Conover friends or family here. It is incredibly dry. He goes to his backyard, essentially, and he walks this New England road that doesn't exist anymore. And he's got, you know, certain ideas of what he might expect, and he doesn't expect anything except some guy puttering around on a you know, motorized lawn, you know, on a driving lawnmower, whatever they're called. And that's it. And he goes to the library and learns some very, you know, what I would deem boring facts. And this is like the first assignment I'm going to give my students. And I let them know, like, you're never going to be reading anything drier than this in my class. But it also offers some really great opportunities, because what he does is, you know, he begins with a hypothesis, what he expects setting off on this journey. And then he has his own personal experiences that he documents and records. Things that could have only occurred to him had he been doing it at that moment. And then he's going and he's going into the library, he's talking to locals, and he's sifting through the archives. And through this, he pulls together a narrative. And so, you know, my students who are freshmen, the first year, they're in Lowell. For most, you know, Lowell has, you know, a very terrible reputation in, you know, Massachusetts. You know, it's a phoenix who's risen from the ashes. It's not that kind of city anymore. But, you know, but for a while, it was a really, you know, really rough place. And this reputation still, you know, that's a narrative that people still tell. And so they're forced to, I challenge them to kind of, you know, obliterate that idea and send them out to go walk some street or some road or some place in the city. And they have to do exactly as Ted Conover did for that. They have to set off with some sort of hypothesis, what they think they're going to be encountering. Then they have to talk to locals. And then they have to go and, you know, most likely it's, you know, going to be done online these days, but they have to, you know, get some sort of archival information about it. I mean, this is a great, you know, exercise. This is what we do, you know, in our lives. This is how we gather information. So, you know, and it does what the course is, you know, setting the students out to do, to, you know, to give them a rich appreciation for the place they'll be calling home. So we do that, and then for the second assignment, what we do is I have them, you know, we have two issues of the Common, and they're going to be, you know, reading it all. And this time I don't say you're going to be doing this specific one, but they have to be doing Llewellyn, you know, reproductions of, you know, homages to several works that they find. And it's always really interesting. You know, I would prefer that they choose certain ones because I think they'd be perfect for the city, perfect for this assignment. And I'm always amazed by the things that they gravitate to. And then they have to do this sort of like mini essay, you know, explaining their intent, explaining what they got from that piece and why it is that they've decided to, you know, to do a Llewellyn homage to it. So those are the assignments we do, you know, as concerns of common.
As I said, I've used the common, and I've used a public space, Agni, and Consequence. Consequence is an interesting example of, it's a journal dedicated to the question of war, to what war is now and has been. And my freshmen are given a freshman read every year, and this past year they were asked to read, this is by the university as part of their general education curriculum, and they were asked to read Thank You for Your Service, which is a narrative of interviewing Iraq soldiers returned from Iraq and what their experience at home has been. And it's very disturbing. It's a very disturbing book, which they read and reported that they felt really very grim afterwards. And I could tell they were struggling to understand how they were going to sort of relate, as the word they most love to use. And with Consequence, I had them read fiction and nonfiction, creative nonfiction, both from that journal. And then we got into an interesting conversation about the strategies used to make war real in the literary magazine versus those in this nonfiction work that they read. So already they're doing just some sort of comparative critical work. I also had them say, okay, so you're freshmen here. Let's say you are the editorial directors now of a literary magazine, and you must make some sort of a magazine. We're going to just sort of map out what it would be like that will encompass the freshman first year experience in all its varieties, you know, physical, sexual, intellectual, all of it. And let's come up with some categories to which fellow students could write, could submit. So Adelphi is part commuter, so one would be commute, you know. One would be food. They're very obsessed with food, with what they eat and don't eat, and why. Denial, you know, all sorts of interesting emotional problems arise when they talk about the food they miss at home and all of that. So classes, question, you know, we'd have a rate your professor, a conversation about rate your professor and what that is and why that's good and bad. So they came up with a lot of categories, and then I had to sort of push back and say, well, what's the overarching, is there connective tissue here? Are you just kind of scattershotting it, and what does that mean? So again, getting them to think about conceiving of a whole, of a literary undertaking, such as a literary magazine necessarily, is an undertaking that's aiming for some kind of coherence. How do you get that? And how do you get that in your own lives, too? It's making them, you know, bring it back to themselves.
And just one more thing that I've done that is fun and necessary to talk about now at this moment of exploding digital technologies is looking at pieces and thinking about what formats or forums they would be good for. You know, could this short story be read on a device, and what would be the difference between that reading experience and something else? Or if you were the editor or publisher of a magazine, would you choose different sorts of pieces for different sorts of media? And that's something that we all think about and confront on a day-to-day basis. So it doesn't only ask us to think about technology and our engagement with technology, but also what is it about the piece that might make it better suited for different media? So you can talk about voice-driven narratives, or you can talk about pieces that might be a little bit more complicated to read and that you might have to slow down to read because linguistically they're very dense, or there's something about the style that might make it a poor fit. And across genres also, it's poetry better suited for one kind of apprehension or reading process or another. So just to sort of throw that into the mix as well, I think is something that students glom onto and that we're all thinking about so often.
Wonderful. I don't have a ton more questions to ask you. I think that all your questions have been, or all your answers have been really comprehensive. One thing that I am wondering about, though, and this is kind of going back to, going back to sort of like the format often of literary journals, you know, you're not, of course, given just, you know, let's say, you know, 16 short stories. You know, there's tons of different forms. There's lots of different genres that are being utilized. I'm specifically going to say, actually, in a writing classroom, how do you make use of all of these different genres, especially if it's a, let's say, a specifically like a creative writing workshop or something along those lines. Because it's really actually interesting to hear you all speak about this, because I think that there's a misconception that like maybe it's a literary magazine can only be used in a writing classroom. And it seems as though that the implications for literary magazines are much, 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 much more broad. So I guess that's kind of two questions. One, what classes do you see literary magazines being used for? And then, yeah, how do you reconcile all of these different genres in a classroom? How do you use all of them? Or do you feel like you need to use the entire object?
I don't know, Jen. As an editor, I'm always trying to figure out how my readers are reconciling the genres in the magazine. I mean, a lot of times I think, ooh, I should put all the poetry, you know, in 40 pages in the middle because it's very confusing. And I have so many readers who read only the poetry or only the fiction, depending on who they are. So every time I publish an issue, which is four times a year, I question the sanity of the project of mixing all of these genres together. So that, I mean, that's really, but then on the other hand, it's a really full view of what's happening in writing, and it gives you so much space to publish work, you know, just writing. That said, I also think that a lot of writers are, I don't think more or less than before, but writers move around in genres a lot. The boundaries are getting kind of even more interesting because people are talking about hybrid genres and multimedia texts, and so there's a lot of pushing and pulling in this idea of boundaries right now that you can really see in literary magazines. And if I only published fiction, I wouldn't be able to get into any of that. But on the flip side, it does occur to me that when I'm teaching a personal essay class, I teach, my course packet is made up of essays taken from lots of different my favorite essays that have been published in lots of different magazines, and I make a course packet, which is a kind of magazine for the course, and so that's like taking all the essays out of their context, because that's how they live on, yeah, in a way. So anyway, that was my first response, is it's all insane. What do you think?
I love the diversity of magazines. I mean, every editor would choose to do it differently in terms of what you focus on publishing. But our magazines are similar in that they include a different kind of content. And I enjoy imagining the reader flipping from one thing to another and going from a photo essay to a poem to a short story and then back again, and letting each of those pieces sift or weigh in differently. I do compose the magazine front to back with the idea that someone reads linearly, but of course that's, you can control what people
right.
do. And so I just put it together in a way that makes sense to me.
Right.
So that's sort of just from the perspective of the object. I think the beauty of it is you can do both, that it's been curated from start to finish, or you can just pull out the pieces that
mm-hmm.
jump out
yeah.
to you on the masthead or from flipping through. And I very much think that literary magazines can be used outside of writing classes, outside of literature classes, that they're... Literature is, you know, speaks to history, it speaks to environmental issues, it speaks to various kinds of psychological or philosophical problems, and a lot of different questions. So I think there's a great opportunity to use literary magazines in other genres. Geography is a sort of a resurgent discipline now, in which we're just looking at how people interact with their landscapes, which for me, as the editor of Placebase magazine, is something that I'm so interested in and would love to see more cross-fertilization there. So, yes.
Yeah, this is all great. I'm thinking about a couple of things. My literature students and my creative writing students alike need the experience of just sort of meandering through a book, call this, let's just call this for the sake of the argument, a book, a physical object that you riffle, that therefore your experience of entering it and engaging with it is different from clicking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to not be clicking all the time, to be riffling and to have that experience of making associations. I mean, the best lit mags are composed,
right,
to use Jen's word, in a way that there are subtle associative sort of connected tissue things happening, but not just sort of from one piece to the next, because often it's not that clear, but sort of connecting genres in subtle ways. Things are happening at the thematic level, at the linguistic level. And oftentimes the reader will discover stuff, I imagine, that even the editor doesn't know exists, and that's part of the sort of puzzle that a magazine is, in the healthiest way, you know, something to tinker with, to sort of say, oh, I read this and that made me think of this, and then that image. And so students in literature classes and creative writing classes alike need that experience. I think it keeps them nimble in ways that are really important. Also, we have a program at Adelphi called Livermore Global Scholars, and you know, I keep intending to talk to the director of that and make sure that the Common and some of the other magazines I love get into the hands of those kinds of students for the reasons you're talking about, which brings me to, if any of you are teaching, one thing to think about is getting the dean of your college, if you're at a university, or the provost or whatever, getting someone at a higher administrative level on board with what literary magazines are and the good they can do students, particularly undergrads, in multiple disciplines. In other words, sort of going and saying you need to fund the acquisition of several literary magazines because they can be used in an interdisciplinary way. When we brought Kat Parnell from Consequence Magazine to talk to my freshman seminar about her magazine and the literature of war, we wrapped in a history class and a sociology class because they were meeting at the same time, and they, you know, got to hear an editor of a lit mag talk, and they'd never met a lit mag before, any of these students in these other disciplines. They're not the English majors. And so they got educated about our circulatory system. So, you know, you have to sort of be shrewd about appealing to the administrative people who need to be able to go to their donors and say, oh, aren't we hip? You know, we got TLR and the Common, and we, you know, we're rocking it here with multiple disciplines, and that's all good.
Yeah, to that, I mean, I think, you know, not speaking for everyone at the book fair, everyone who has a booth or a table, but I'm sure they would be just as excited to know that their work is being taught in the classroom, unlike teaching a novel by, you know, by someone whose, you know, whose book is being turned into a film. It's going to be really, really difficult to get that person to come into the classroom to speak to your students. These journals, you know, and again, I'm making a very grand assumption, but I believe they'll be really, you know, excited by the idea that students are, that they're going to have a larger readership and more diverse readership, like, you know, a younger readership. And so there's going to be that, you know, an a possibility, an opportunity to have access to them that you know, that certainly wouldn't happen with you know, your typical anthology, and, you know, more often than not with a novel that you would be teaching. And then, you know, for the undergrad students, you know, I think it's fantastic to be teaching a literary journal because you get the fiction, you get the creative nonfiction essays, you get the poetry, and then you also have, you know, quite often work, you know, or quite oftentimes portfolios of artwork or photography. And so, you know, allowing the students to find what most, you know, excites them. I'm always surprised by it. I'm always amazed at what they're drawn to, because I would have assumed, you know, if it was me just saying, okay, we're going to be teaching, or I'm going to be teaching this, this is what we're going to be focusing on, I would have assumed that that's what they would have been most you know, awakened by, but that's not the case at all. And so it's really great having the opportunity, or having giving the students the opportunity to be discovering this work on their own, because, you know, you get to work with all these different genres and mediums.
That was great, and I think we have some time left for questions, so please feel free.
I'm teaching high school students for a college access program, and so actually a couple weeks ago I talked to my school director and I was like, oh, I really like to do literary magazines, like I wonder how to incorporate that, so I'm really glad this panel's here. And so I was wondering if you had any suggestions for how to teach literary magazines to high schoolers, both to encourage creative writing, but also critical analytical writing.
Great.
It's not. I haven't taught high school.
Sorry, does that need to repeat the question really quick? So the question is specifically about teaching literate magazines to high school students.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. We've been thinking about this a lot with the Common in the classroom, and several rows back is a woman named Liz Woody who's coordinating this. So you could speak to her about specifically how we're beginning to work with high schools about this. And I think it differs between private high schools and public high schools, and what the needs of your classroom is. Do you have to teach to the Common Core, or are you working in a different kind of classroom? But I think it's really exciting to think about teaching literary magazines on the high school level. And I've had several conversations with high school teachers at AWP who, for all the same reasons that we're interested in bringing it into the college classroom, want to bring it into high schools. But you probably have to think about it in a slightly different way. And so I would be interested in hearing from you maybe afterwards about more what your classroom is like and what you're hoping to get out of it. But I think many of the same sort of goals of engagement with contemporary work and diversity of genres and articulating responses to pieces all exist within the high school classroom as well.
Yeah, it's an enrichment program, so they have after school time to work on. So we're not constrained to like a Common Core.
Got it.
But it is within a public school.
Right. Great.
Are they making their own magazine?
They're not, but that's also a question for, we're doing a summer writing workshop, which in the midst of composing right now, so that's another thing we might do. Actually, that's a really good idea, not just have like a journal, but have it be separate into genres would be really cool. Hmm.
Next question.
So I was also interested in the idea of teaching in high school, because I teach high school kids now. The summertime with lit mags, all the time, like our program is to build a lit mag, pull their work that's really professional, you know. But I'm wondering about like how do you phrase that in a way that like is like seems more valid? Because as you said in your panel, like a lot, like I understand that lit mags are valid, and like everybody who's working with them in our program does. But like my teacher or my parent who comes in out of like the cornfields in which I live doesn't really understand necessarily, because like I haven't heard this name. I didn't get taught this. Well, it's not a real person, as like, you know, you get, how do you teach them, like, oh, this is a real literary mag, like, this is real, like, this is, like, real how publishing works, part one. Part two is the same question for online literary journals, because they are not bound, do you consider them, like, as teachable?
All right, so the question, the first one is, how do you phrase, or how do you approach the topic of literary magazines being enriching to students' lives in classrooms to people who might not believe that entirely? And then are online magazines just as valuable as print magazines as teaching tools?
I just want to address the first part of the question, actually, at the risk of revealing too much about where I teach. I frequently have to explain to my administration why they should have a literary magazine on campus. And what's interesting is it doesn't actually take much to say that this is, that our magazine is that our magazine has won awards, has been selected for Best American, this or that. You mentioned a couple of the anthologies. My administration thinks it's wonderful that we publish people who have won Guggenheims and NEAs, and it's amazing how those small phrases of quality, they really actually go a great distance in terms of addressing a group of accountants who may not know what the intrinsic value of a literary magazine is. It's kind of name-dropping. Foundations. You just say Guggenheim and everybody goes, oh, of course. So that's just my experience with the cornfields. The second part of the question was?
Online magazines.
Are they as legitimate?
As a teaching tool.
I think for younger students, they probably have a pacing and a structure that may be more accessible to them. Children read on devices small children already with more willingly. You know, my kid will read gigantic books on the Kindle. He's 8. He came home the other day with his Percy Jackson book that he'd already read, but he'd gotten out of the library, and he was like, "Look, this comes on a book too." You know, and he got it from the library because of the novelty of it being printed.
Wow.
You know, and he had no idea that he'd read 700 pages or whatever it was, and he was really impressed with the object. But there is a way in which the pushing through of buttons and the logic of an online structure is more accessible to a younger population, I think, than us old fogies. That's my answer to your two-part question.
I think that the line between a pretty sophisticated high school student, such as you described in sort of College Access, is that how you described the program? Or just, you know, kids in a good English classroom in high school that are into it, excited, that basically enjoy it. The line between that student cohort and a freshman is pretty thin, you know? So my aim always is to get them to just slow the hell down, just to sort of sit there and take the thing, and we say, what does it feel like to touch? Someone describe the feeling of the cover. Do you have words to tell me what this feels like? And that sounds silly, but you'd be surprised. You get a lot of traction out of 5 minutes. Silky, satiny, you know, you go through fabrics, we talk about adjectives, we do that. And then, does this scare the hell out of you? Does it amuse you? Does it perplex you? What is this? What kind of bird? Does anyone know anything about it? So we go slow. We start with that. Just kind of make them slow down, make them engage step by step until they've sort of gotten into, oh man, I kind of know this thing intimately as a thing. And then it's like, what are these what contents? Like, why and who are, what are they said, what are contributors? They, you know, they don't know what a contributor, what does that mean? So then, and sometimes I'll trot out, what's that short story called, Acknowledgement? I think it's a Paul Theroux, like a spoof story, a fake acknowledgement where the narrator just goes completely off the rails, crazy by the end of it. So you can bring in, you know, something like that, and that makes it teachable in another way. If some humor and some sort of slowing down is brought to it, it makes it all very accessible and they get engaged.
And just quickly, I don't think the argument for why you would want to teach any kind of literature is applicable to literary magazines. A magazine just simply is a lot of different kinds of literature put in a single package. So you could say, hey, more bang for your buck. You get all of these like different kinds of things in one package. So even if the idea of a literary magazine doesn't mean anything, just break it down and say, this is what it is. It's contemporary fiction and essays and poetry by people who are writing and publishing now. It's going to be of interest to our students because of the immediacy, and just sort of discard that term, literary magazine, because it's not necessarily transparent to everyone.
Last spring, I spent a semester teaching at a Harvard School in New York. On the book review, I didn't give the comment. Hello, created our own literary magazine, but one of the things I found, I used a lot of different sources, and it was an elective, and was, you know, using magazines like the Common, there's an element of serendipity. I mean, you could be working with a student, for example, on a particular piece, and, you know, in our case, we were, the theme of the school was maritime, you know, all sorts of maritime issues. So, you know, you might just be, you could grab a literary magazine and, you know, there'd be, I don't know, 50% chance that there'll be something in there that you can, you know, that you could point to, that you can grab at, and you can say, look, you know, you're having trouble with this first person essay. Here's one that does this well. And I think that if you have that sort of material that you can just pull it, read on the subway, if you live in the subway, and then just sort of bring it in the next day, it adds an element of improvisation or spontaneity to the classroom, and I think it also gives the students the feeling that, you know, out there, you know, you could pick up anything, and it could be interesting. It could be just the thing you're looking for. And I think when the students see you do that, that also inspires them to do that in other ways with other types of literature.
I'm kind of coming from this on the flip side as a magazine editor, so I don't know if this is quite the right panel for this question, but you know, I of course agree literary magazines should be in classrooms everywhere. So I'm wondering, you know, we've tried to develop our own sort of education initiative and lesson plans and connecting with the authors. I'm wondering, how do we get into the classrooms and how do we find classrooms that are open to this beyond possibly just person-to-person networking, because I'm in a literary desert in Texas, so I'm just kind of wondering, how do I find people like you who are open to finding and bringing literary magazines into the classroom?
I have the same question.
Yeah. The question is, how are there any programs that support bringing literary magazines to the classroom? And I can help answer that question. CLMP has a Lit Mag adoption program, which we've done for years. We recently shut it down just because the back end was just kind of not really working, and it just needed to run a little bit more smoothly. So hopefully we're going to be trying to roll that back out again as soon as we possibly can. And the idea is that, you know, as a teacher, you're able to log in and then literally kind of adopt a magazine for your particular classroom. And what you get along with that, along with your students being able to get these magazines, you also get a virtual or in-person visit from an editor of that particular magazine, who come and like, do kind of a visit for the classroom. So that's one program. That's the one that I know of, because that's the one that I work for, the organization that puts it on. But do any of you all know of anything else?
Well, we're thinking through this same program about, you know, how do you find more and more faculty or teachers of different kinds, apart from settings like this, who might be interested in bringing magazines into the classrooms. And I think, you know, just sort of thinking about what the needs of those of different kinds of teachers are, for example, high schools and public versus private, and what their concerns are, or public or libraries, or library associations be able to help connect with various constituencies? What are the professional organizations that are composed of either within a discipline, people like the MLA or something, or some discipline who are teaching in a certain discipline at that level, or organizations of high school teachers. And we're just sort of beginning to look into this, but those are the kinds of things that we've started to think about. Somebody else might have a better, more concrete answer, but...
I'm not an editor, and I actually haven't done the mental exercise of thinking through what an editor would do to ensure that his or her magazine got into the classroom, but I mean, it occurs to me that if you're reading a magazine, you see a story, a poem, or whatever that you really like, you flip to that contributor section and you find out that author X teaches at, you know, college or university Y, you could write that person drop that person a note saying, I really enjoyed your story in X, even if it's not your, you know, Lit Mag. I mean, you would be speaking to that person if it was in your magazine or your journal, but it could be in some other, and, you know, just sort of say, I edit this thing. I just like you to know that, you know, I really admire your work, and I imagine you teach in a lively classroom. You know, your classroom must be lively. If you're ever interested, I can certainly, you know, arrange to have myself or someone come to your classroom to, you know, just to be of help. As a teacher, I mean, I love bringing Jen in. I love bringing Bridget Hughes from A Public Space and Kat Parnell from Consequence, and then I'm going to tell you next. And, I mean, it's very nice to have someone come in. It just, you know, takes the load off the feet for a class period. And but also, you know, it's a refreshment of the energies that are. I'm sure you experience exactly the same thing. So I would not be shy about, you know, hitting. I mean, what's the worst they can say? It's like, no, you know, that's a very subtle but brazen at the same time pitch. Good job, but no. I mean, the worst that can happen is you get turned down.
Julian, specifically, how did you come to start teaching the common in your classroom?
You know, as I said, it happened last AWP on, you know, during the Great Purge, and it was a person-to-person thing, you know, like to your, you know, question, I would say, well, you got two people who are looking to teach them, there you go, matchmaker. And just, you know, speaking with Jennifer, who, you know, who who I'd run into before at the Boston Book Fair, and just, you know, just really just having a conversation like that. And then thankfully it was Saturday, but I was still sharp enough after this whole thing. I had to think, wait a minute, like I could use, you know, there's a possibility to use this in the classroom. I'm always looking for new ways to be, you know, to be teaching the core principles, and, you know, not to get into this sort of, you know, Sisyphean struggle, like just like bored to death of pushing this boulder up a hill. You know, what are ways that I can make it exciting for me? And I think someone said it, or maybe back there, that by making it exciting for you, the students too are going to be energized. They're going to be, they're going to be very, very aware to that. They know the person who's been pointing at the, you know, the three branches of government for the last 15 years of his life. And so, you know, so this is how, you know, so this is why I brought it in. I think, okay, this would be good. And then to that, you know, it does require to be on your feet. I had no idea what I was going to be getting from this journal until I started to, you know, look through it. And then I'm like, okay, I could do this, I could do that, I could do this, I could do that. And, you know, we've had a lot of fun. And then bringing in, you know, Jennifer to come to speak to my students and manage to get, you know, I think like three or four sections in there. And then to the, you know, the English department caught wind of it somehow. And they're like, hey, can we send our students? We've got a student, you know, magazine. Do you mind if they come? And so by, you know, by letting, you know, really ask permission of nobody, which was a great thing. And then the school got really excited by it.
I'm curious, because of course now I'm thinking about what I'm gonna do. It seems like we should have a place on our website that's really explicitly. You may already have it. I think you may already have it, but. You know, a place where teachers know they can go and order a desk copy or start a conversation. So, and I don't have that, and I can put it up very easily. My question is, if you're a teacher, where would you look for that? Like, what section, what page on the website would you look under for that?
I'm the managing editor of Waterstone Review, and we do this. We put actually free class sets on our web store.
Okay.
And it just has a thing to connect. Instead of buying it, it has just a direct email to the managing editor.
Right.
That's one way that we do that. I also do Facebook plugs with, like, all the local teachers of community colleges. And so, like, once in a while, we'll just run a promotion that says free class sets. And for free, we just use our back issues at the time. And it comes in a box of 24. It's pretty free, and that's just what we do to get them out there. We're not offering the lesson plans at this point or the visits, but
right.
Yes, all that can happen, right, when you just look at the contributors, and
right.
That can happen. Those are two things we do. The other thing I just wanted to point out about in terms of teaching LitMags, here in Minnesota, we partner with the Minnesota Prison Writers Workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Getting LitMags into prisons and
yeah.
Sort of those classroom settings is so ridiculously easy and appreciated because they get a full class set of something. And they are in the position where they're often making their own literary journals, and holding something that they've made feels really good.
Yeah.
So we've been working with the Minnesota Prison Writers Workshop, and I'm sure that there are programs like that nationwide.
Yeah, CLMP gets more letters from prisoners than we do from teachers.
Yeah.
Asking for
yeah.
For literary magazines.
And every prison system, I mean, every facility has an education manager or education director. And they may or may not have programs like that where inside the buildings or inside the facilities that teach that, but more than likely there is something.
Yeah.
And just getting class sets out there that way has been really beneficial for us too, because we get some amazing submissions sometimes
yeah.
from these inmates as well.
We should talk about a panel for next year's AWP.
Okay.
Those are great suggestions.
Anybody else have other questions? Yeah. Sorry, could you repeat that one more time?
Yeah. I was just wondering if you could talk a bit more about using student literary magazines in the classroom and what the value of that might be.
Like students making their own literary magazines?
Yeah.
So the question is what the value is of students starting and doing a student-run literary magazine in the classroom. What is the value of that?
I think it comes back to some of these questions, the sort of imaginative intellectual exercises that we were talking about like articulating a mission statement, being able to think about what kinds of pieces might go well together in a, you know, piece for what reasons, thinking about the look and feel and presentation of something, and how that affects just getting students to ask themselves those questions about how they might do something to put themselves in that sort of empowering situation, and to be able to make various kinds of decisions that draw on aesthetics and various themes and issues and diversity of genres, and just, I think, just provoking students to ask those questions is interesting. And so I haven't run a classroom where I've actually had students produce a magazine in the end, but we've gone through these kinds of, if you were an editor, if you were a publisher, what would you do?
Yeah, I just want to clarify in terms of my own experience with this. I would never dream of trying to make a class production. That's way too ambitious. There's just too much involved in too short a period of time. But just as Jen has described, there's a kind of thoughtfulness you can, you know, bring about in students just imagining what is involved, what it takes. And I think that is a very important creative exercise and also practical exercise. They need to know something about the business of this as well, you know, how much it costs and what's involved. And, you know, for me to have brought several female founders of literary magazines into the classroom has also been very exciting, for students to see models of women who've conceived of these things pretty much, you know, out of thin air and made them work. There's been a sort of double benefit there in that way. Beat account.
I think that one thing to consider about that project is that you'd have to... there are aspects of the production, if you were trying to fit it into a class, when I've seen it done, like 12th Street, which is a student totally composed, it's a class, 12th Street Magazine, which has a table downstairs, it's out of the New School, it's a year-long class where they put together the magazine and they meet every week and they learn different aspects of editing and production, but the production of it and the template for it, all of the making it into an actual object, is already in place. So the students don't have to actually spend their time with that very time consumed. That's the stuff that would kill the project if you were trying to get them to figure out where to print it. You know, so you'd actually have to put that kind of thing in place. Even if you were doing a website one, I think you'd have to set up a template for it so that the students are really only focusing on filling the issue, making decisions about artwork. So 12th Street might be an interesting table to stop and talk to about how that is operated if you were going to do that. So you'd have to make all the decisions about production so that's not part of the... That's too much. I think that's what makes it too much. You have to give them a shell that they can fill.
And then I know for my students, you know, because they were doing Llewellyn reproductions or homages to work found in the common, and we do have a student-run literary journal, so, you know, so I said, oh, this is great. You guys have essentially written poems and short stories and done, yeah, so submit to them. And now, you know, and it's a wonderful thing for a student. I mean, you know, my students, most of their words appear, you know, on a screen, written on a screen, you know, delivered on a screen, read on a screen, and that's it, you know, whether it's academic or just personal writing. So to have, you know, a hard copy and to see it, and then two, you know, we've done a great thing with the Common to where we have some of the student examples now up on the Common website too, and you know, it's a great thing for the students to have their work suddenly reach much larger audience than the one that they typically receive, and that's just me. So there's that. But we have,
a production thing is key for us too. Waterstone is also teaching drill for our graduate students, so they take the course in the editorial part. But then we partner with, and this might be an option for people. We partner with, in this case, Minneapolis College of Art and Design, and they do the production. They work with a student and a faculty member there, because that production is key. You just can't fit that into a semester.
Yeah.
And then we also have an undergraduate online journal where, again, they do all the editorial work inside. inside the classroom, and then is published like a month after they're done with that online. Mm-hmm. But the production piece is like, no one knows about that.
Right.
It's crazy how much work that is.
Killer.
All right, looks like we're just about out of time. I'm sure if you have any other questions, everybody up here would be happy to answer any of them. Thank you again to Martha and Jen and Julian and Minna. Everybody have a great AWP. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.